Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Rouleau podcast. I'm Ian Parkinson. Now, we're under strict instructions from the UCI to turn our focus to and enjoy the upcoming races on the cycling calendar, so we'll certainly do our best. There's a bike race on at the moment, although whether it ends up being more than a procession around France behind Chris Froome, we'll have to wait and see. And at the time of recording, Leah Kirchmann of Sunweb is leading the Giro Rosa, the biggest women's stage race of the year, unfortunately run at the same time as the biggest men's stage race. There was one familiar face in particular missing from the start line of the Tour de France in Noirmoutier on Saturday after 20 Grand Tours in a row, which is not surprisingly a record. Adam Hansen of Lotto Soudal is sitting this one out. Specifically, he's sitting in a TV studio, commentating and analysing for Eurosport. We caught up with him just before the start. Commentating isn't something he's done much of.
No, not really. Well, on the other side, I have. I'm listening to the commentating and I'm doing interviews and that with them, but not actually commentating and speaking with the riders on the other side. So, no, I haven't.
Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I am. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a good way to see it from the commentating side, and yeah, I think it'd be, I'm really looking forward to it actually.
Chris Froome is now riding the Tour after a lot of uncertainty. Do you think he's, you know, bound to win it?
Well, you know, he is the best Grand Tour rider in the, let's say, the last 7-8 years. If I was going to place a bet, yeah, I do think I would put my money on Chris Froome. He's been the most consistent. He's got a very strong squad behind him. He knows how to do it. You know, in the last five Tour de Frances, he's won four.
If you had to pick someone who might upset that, who do you think that would be?
You know, when you look at a team like Movistar with three leaders, Landers, Silverda and Quintana, I think they can put a real good show on. And they can really, they're very strong in the mountains. So I think they're probably equal or maybe better than Team Sky. But then on the other side, you've got the team time trial, which they lack the skills there. So they're going to lose a bit of time. So they have to attack in the mountains. So I think that would be very exciting to how they will race. I think Nibali's confident. And Nibali's a guy that does, you know, attacks and he likes to gamble a little. So I'd probably, you know, I think there will be Nibali on the podium and one of the movie stars on the podium. Which order? This I cannot predict, but I think maybe from those guys.
From what you've seen of the course, are there any sort of, you know, key stages we should be looking out for? Any sort of points on the race where you think, oh, that's where it's going to be decided?
Poor GC, definitely stage 9 with the cobbles. You know, you saw the year when Nibali took so much time on his contenders. He did a lot of damage there, and that's also the year when Chris Froome crashed out. So chaos can happen on this stage, and this stage, GC guys will lose a lot of team, and some GC guys will benefit quite a lot from the Roubaix stage. And this can even guys will crash out, unfortunately. So this stage, I think, would be definitely one of the key stages. Overall, it's not an easy Grand Tour. It's yes, there's some mountain stages. Yes, there's a lot of flat stages, but it's a very hilly, undulated Grand Tour. With if you look from stage 10 onwards, there's yes, some looks pretty flat, but you know, it's always undulated, always hilly. And these are hard days. So I think you will see some riders not doing their best, And also, if you look at stage 17, it's such a short stage, 65 kilometers, three climbs. It starts from basically zero and goes straight up. Some GC contenders are really going to struggle on this day. They've never had this before. A lot of guys like to warm up. And even on stage 17, I really suspect some teams will be doing maybe an hour ride before, maybe an hour and a half before. And, yeah, definitely this stage you'll see one or two GC guys definitely crack.
Is it going to feel weird for you sitting in a TV studio watching a Grand Tour rather than actually being in the peloton?
Yes, it will. Yeah, I've done every single Grand Tour since 2011 in the Vuelta. So this will be the first one I've chosen to not participate in. And, yeah, to see it from the other side will be, yeah, a world of difference. So it will actually be the first time I probably actually actually see what happens in a Grand Tour. What a lot of people forget is when you're riding a Grand Tour and you're not a GC contender, you don't actually see a lot of the race. You see a lot of your own race and what you're doing and you helping out the team, but you do miss out on a lot of things that do happen in the stage. That's, you know, if it's a breakaway, you don't know how the breakaway unfolds in the final because you're on the peloton supporting a rider in the final when the top, you know, 12 to 8 riders are attacking each other on the last climb. This you never see as a rider because, you know, you're still climbing the mountain before. So it'll be nice to actually watch a Grand Tour for the first time since 2011 and, in that sense, it'd be kind of interesting. And then you got some stages where you just don't want to be there because it's going to be like stage one, for example. You know, the riders will tackle the twisty roads on the west coast of France, and if there's a lot of wind pick up, this is not going to be a nice stage for the first Tour de France. And I sort of have to say this nicely, but it's not a stage where I'd like to be at. It's going to be nervous. It's going to be stressful. There's going to be carnage. And so I think I'd rather watch this race, the stage, than rather do it.
20 Grand Tours in a row. Looking back, can you pick out a best experience in there? I presume 2014 Giro must be up there.
Yeah, 2014 Giro was definitely up there with a stage win there. Can never complain about that. It was my first Grand Tour stage win in Pescara. And, yeah, it's a very emotional moment for me that day. And it was the day before my birthday, so it was a good birthday gift for myself. Yeah, it was a very emotional day for me. Also, the year after, when I won a stage in the 19th stage in the Vuelta, 2015, this also, it was a very different win. It was from a selected group. Was in a final, so that's probably a more meaningful win for me. But you know, I've had a lot of good memories in Grand Tours. I've been on teams where we've had the yellow jersey, green jersey, white jersey, and supported these riders. Heaps of success with Andre Greipel. I don't know how many stages he's won, and I've been part of. I think it must be more than 8 or 9 sprints. And this success is definitely some very nice emotional moments and, yeah, memories that I would never forget.
And what about the ones you would rather forget?
I think, this goes back probably to crashes or bad weather days. In Grand Tours, I've broken sternums, collarbones, ribs, fingers. I've had 2 metal plates put in my body because of this. These days are I never liked by the cyclists. And then you've got the bad weather days, like in the Giro when we went over to Stervio and it was snowing so much. This was like the second coldest day I've ever ridden on the bike. And probably the worst day I've ever done was in the Vuelta 1 year. We had a stage in Andorra and it was just raining cold. I think 26 riders pulled out because of the weather. Just so cold, and it's hard to hold your bike on the descents. You know, you're shaking so much, and the bike's shaking. And these days is the they're probably the not only the worst memories in Grand Tour, but probably the worst memories I've had in life.
Adam, good luck in the TV studio. Good luck with the rest of the season. And thanks very much for talking to us.
I thank you also. I hope everything goes well. I hope it's going to be exciting Tour de France for everyone. And I look forward to it.
Adam Hansen. Now, in the weeks leading up to the Tour de France, most countries stage their national road and time trial championships, so the peloton in July is full of new national jerseys and skin suits. In Northumberland this year, Team Breeze rider Jess Roberts took the women's British road title, and 22-year-old Connor Swift of Madison Genesis fought off Adam Blythe and Owen Doull to win the men's. The team manager of Madison Genesis is Colin Sturgis, who won a World Individual Pursuit title on the track and the British Road title back in 1990. Ian Cleverley spoke to him before this year's event, and Colin remembered the course on which he took the red, white and blue jersey.
Pretty flat, almost like a Belgian kermesse, pretty much. There's a few rolling roads, but windy, small roads, lots of turns, and... it suited me down to the ground.
Did you know much about it before you came over? Did you have a couple of days to check it out?
No, we'd ridden it the year before. This was back in the day when it seemed to go out to tender for sort of 2 years at a time. So ridden it the year before in quite different circumstances. And the weather was, stunning. Really nice, riding around in the sunshine, rolling your sleeves and shorts up, a la Sean Yates. And then, the year I won it, it started okay, and then it just deteriorated and ended up getting quite nippy and pretty grim, rainy, very, very windy. So I knew the circuit pretty well.
You are one of those, let's face it, fancy Dan foreign pros coming over to England with your fancy ways. And how many of you guys were there? Do you remember, like, give or take?
Well, probably six of us. I can't remember if Sean rode. So that would be Sean Yates, Miller, Malcolm Elliott. There was myself, Harry Lodge, Nick Barnes, who also rode for Tekka. Daryl Webster, who was in Tekka. There could have been sort of six, ten at absolute tops.
And do you stick together? Is there any kind of alliances on the road there, or is it just every man for himself?
There was. I'd be lying if I said not. You sort of look after, domestic pros looked after themselves, and the individuals looked after themselves and made alliances. And I know Harry Lodge and myself, who also rode for a Belgian team, we sort of said, right, well, we won't ride for each other, but we won't ride against each other. And then we were both in the break, and we both said basically, okay, well, let's look after each other here. Not that we were riding against the domestic pros, it's just, when needs must, you sort of look after your own interests. And Harry hit out, with about 2 or 3K to go, and it looked like he'd got it, and then he started fading, and Luckwell and Rob Holden and a couple of the other guys were, chasing him down. I thought, Harry's going to get caught here. And then I opened up with, 750 or something to go, 600 metres to go, and just won the gallop.
Now you're on the other side of the fence. You're managing a domestic team, Madison Genesis, and you have to try and screw over those fancy down foreign pros. How do you go about that?
Yeah, just tell them don't get intimidated. Don't fall into the traps that I laid, basically, back all those years ago. It's a strange race, the Nationals. It's, we're about to go in after dinner and have a team talk. And, the first thing I'll say is, look, guys, I realise it's an individual championships, but we still need to ride as a team. So, by 50, 60 Ks in, and don't forget it's a really short championship. It's only 180 Ks. So, after 50 or 60 kilometres, we're going to know who of you is on a good day, who is on a bad day. By then, a little break should have gone. A selection will have been made. So, some of you are going to have to lay your championships on the line for the stronger riders. And then it's up to those stronger riders to not necessarily ride off the World Tour teams, but to be aware that, they are stronger because of the dint that they will tour and have a certain amount of racing days in the lakes, and we don't. So we just need to be savvy. We don't need to be overawed. We don't need to be scared or fearful of them, but we just need to ride clever.
wondered if you'd noticed a difference in the UK domestic scene from those days when you were coming over and riding and winning the national champs, and then you were on Bright as well, I guess, but based back here as well. So, but it seems to me that there is a better organised team dynamic now than from those days. There was a few strong guys and everybody else was going out the back.
Yeah, that's a pretty good synopsis of it. Nowadays, you know, we've got, well, this year, you only have to look at like qualification points for Tour of Britain. You know, we've got five teams that are still very, very much in the mix, and five strong teams. You wouldn't have had that back in 90. You know, you had Evreddy and Banana Falcon, but now you've got five, and you've got strength and depth. I'm not particularly sort of enamoured with the sort of dynamic we have at the moment. I think, you know, we need more racing in the UK to sort of, I don't know, further the UCI teams, and you know, that rung below the UCI teams as well. Like, in Britain, we don't have a 2.2, we don't have anything other than Tour of Britain and Tour of Yorkshire and the Beaumont Trophy and Rutland.
Yeah.
We've got four UCI events. I'm not talking, obviously, the World Tour event in London, but for Conti teams like us, you know, we need a 2.2, we need a 1.2, we need four 1.2s, because that's what we thrive off. And it's only going to encourage and it's only going to strengthen the continental base of this country by having more races. And I'm not sort of blinkered enough to think that, you know, you just put your hand up and go, yeah, I'll organise a UCI event. I know there is so much more involved, but nobody seems to want to put their hand up and say, well, yeah, I'll give it a crack. It may only be for a year, but at least you have more racing. And that's only going to help us. So the domestic scene is in a good position in comparison with back then, but it's not as good as it could be.
And that's more down to the actual races rather than the people that are there to race it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, you only have to look in... You have a look in, you know, Ian Bibby. You have a look in our squad. You know, we've got Johnny McAvoy and Eric Roussel. You know, these guys are pro Conti, if not above, quality of riders. And, you know, Roussel and McAvoy have proved that. They've ridden for NetApp.
Finally, have you still got your national champs jersey? And did you enjoy your year in it?
I loved my year in it. Yeah, I had a ball. I got back to Belgium about a week after. Spent some time in the UK, and one of my DSs lived in the same house as I lived. It was a big three-story place in Thames. So I remember coming back into my house, opening the door up to the bedroom, dumping the bags, and there was just a mass of jerseys on the bed and kit and whatever all printed up. I've still got a jersey. I gave one away to Brad Wiggins a couple of years ago, and I've still got one for myself. And I've still got the original presentation version somewhere. But, yeah, those sort of things you keep, you know, they're in a suitcase up in a shed somewhere, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's all good. It's all pretty special stuff.
Colin Sturgis. Well, time to catch up now with Rouleur's Desire editor, Stuart Clapp. Now, the Tour de France has returned, which means the return of Rouleur's Top Banana Award as well. Stuart, just remind us quickly how it works.
What happens is that you get stage winners during the Tour de France. They get the podium, champagne and everything else, and flowers. But you get other riders that work tirelessly for them and to set up the stage win or for the whole tour. We like a top banana, which is someone who's like Lawson Craddock after his big crash, does, you know, something heroic, like actually gets back on his bike and rides the following day, which is something that a lot of the World Cup footballers won't do.
What would your sort of criteria for a top banana be, your personal criteria?
Mine have to be way more superficial than any of the other guys in the office. So a top banana for me, if you think back like years, you know, when the like Ryder Heisdale wore those white sunglasses, that sort of thing is a top banana for me. He got into a break that day as well. Or just anyone that Jack Bauer's in, really. The one where Jack Bauer nearly won and then cried. God, I would have hugged him. I would have hugged him. That day, Jack Bauer's always a winner. I had friends actually get on yesterday's stage. He did an interview afterwards, and they were saying, "Oh, you're missing it. Jack's talking. He's doing an interview." And yeah, I'm a big fan of Jack's, and mainly his legs. They look like they're carved out of dark mahogany.
And Heinrich Hausler as well.
Yeah, where do you want me to start? Hausler always been a favourite. He's always been a favourite of mine. Great hair. Also good legs too. In fact, that reminds me of a story that I when I was with Heinrich Hausler, and he showed me his tan lines, and they weren't where you usually find them on a cyclist. Yeah, they were slightly higher. Style points, really. I'm looking for style points. Alex Howes is always a good one for style points in any race. I think he's quite a stylish guy. Or Taylor Finney with a moustache. Yeah, there's plenty to choose from. But don't necessarily look at it the way everyone wants to look at the top banana. Don't think about the diesels. Think about Diesel, the clothing brand. We want something. I like to see something a little bit different.
News now, which I know will excite you, Stuart. We have a new regular contributor on the Ruler podcast, a lifetime Top Banana Award winner, if the Top Banana Award had been going during his career, the legendary Brian Holm.
Ugh, what can I say? He's part of my celebrity family. He's Bad Uncle Brian Holm, the one who gives you the best presents at Christmas. Maybe owns a snake, rides a motorbike. The one your mum's going to warn you about. Don't spend too much time with Brian. He'll lead you astray. I love Brian Holm. He's a great guy. And I'm excited as you are about having him on here. Everyone's excited about it.
And if you don't know Brian, he was one of the famous Crazy Danes from the 80s and 90s, most famously riding for Telecom alongside Bjarne Riis. He's gone on to be an excellent director sportif, currently with Quickstep Floors. There really is very little he doesn't know about pro cycling, good and bad, and his views are always worth listening to. For his first contribution, he's talking to us about the Grand Tours and what it's like to be part of them. And of course, Brian is so cool, he's even recommended his own theme tune from fellow Danes Power Solo. It's called Boom Baba Doo Bada.
This is Brian Holland, you're listening to Ruler Podcast.
The Grand Tours is very, very different, but all of them is hard. You will see the interview year after year. They say now it's getting more dangerous, now they're getting faster. People have no respect anymore. I mean, we heard the whole record for like 100 years. And that's just a sign it's a hard race. After the Giro, I mean, we saw young Danish riders saying it's getting harder and harder, you know, no respect in the bunch. Yeah, we said the same 30 years ago. And that, of course, it takes a lot of concentration. Giro d'Italia, really getting better and better, no doubt about it. And the past, in the 80s, 90s, are sort of considered like sort of an Italian championship. I mean, mostly for Italians. But nowadays, it's getting better. It's maybe not the Tour de France yet, but it's getting close. It was a bit extreme some years with crazy roads, was you almost have to use a mountain bike. Thanks God they doesn't do that anymore. So very, very good race, and where we winning a stage is where you make history. You have something rest of your life. I still say Tour de France, there's something about Tour de France, winning a stage, something you have forever. Getting in there, the madhouse, you have to be prepared for it. The journalist, the craziness, everybody's focused. There's a lot of crashes. Big crowd on the road. All the people is just crazy. Every time I get there, I always think like, where's all the people coming from? How can there be so many people? We doesn't just not talk about the finish line, the last 5 kilometers. It's from kilometer zero. People standing there. It's crazy. And of course, we have VIP guests, you have journalists, people getting tired, people start to fight. So point of stress, if you're not prepared for it, you probably have a surprise. Getting home after 1 month you're away, it's a strange feeling also. You sort of adapt after a few weeks to the stress, sleeping a little bit less than normal, really being hyper, getting home, telling your family, you miss them, and then you get home, and you just feel empty. Just like looking, I remember Hinkepi saying, you look out, you're training, you look out, up, where's the choppers, where the helicopters, looking out the window, and my wife said, Brian, you're a little bit weird, you're home, didn't you miss us? And then you learn after a few years, just telling your family, just give me 2 days. It's like sort of a jet lag, give me 2 days, I just have to land on my feet again. For sure I missed you, but it's very, quite an empty feeling to come back. And I think a lot of journalists have sort of the same feeling. And that, of course, is the same if you go to Vuelta. You're packing your suitcase almost every day. You're around people every day. A lot of noise every day. A lot of action every day. I mean, every day start with what's happening today. It's going to be a quiet day. Probably not. Probably we puncture. We can have a problem with somebody, Sonia, break an arm. We need a new Sonia rider dropping out. We have to get him to the airport. Wow, the closest airport is 250 kilometers away. Who's going to drive him 4 o'clock in the morning? Nobody going to love to have that message, and so on. So always a lot of, I wouldn't call it stress, but always something to do. So getting home and suddenly for 2 days, nothing to do. Very strange feeling.
Brian Holm. And there'll be more from him on the next Ruler podcast. But that's it from this one. Enjoy the tour. Tweet your top banana. And don't forget, the Ruler Classic event is coming in London 1st to the 3rd of November. Eddie Merckx, Lizzie Deignan, Paolo Bettini and UCI President David Lapartien are already confirmed and plenty more to come. You have until August to get your hands on the early bird deals. £100 currently for all 3 days. Bargain. Speak next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.